Okay, so we'll start our class. And so, do you have any problem, any questions about the problems from the previous week? Like from chapter 2 problems?
Not really a specific problem, but the question, how can you test for a blank line?
So suppose you read the line into a string, like, how do you do this? Do you use scan for?
I've been alternating this. I've tried scanning it as a, using scanf as a string. I've tried using gets.
Okay.
Neither method I've used has worked. It keeps either I get into an infinite loop, or it doesn't. It bypasses the loop completely.
Which problem is it?
Stack them up.
Okay, thank you. When you read the screen, like, did you scan it like that? Then to test if the screen is empty, you just call str. CMP of S and an empty string. And if this returns zero, this means that this string is empty. Do you use this function or any other function?
I've tried to do that. I'm trying to remember. Is there a space in between the quotations?
No, no space.
No space. Just trying to remember. I think I did try that. I'll try it again.
Okay. But does it say that like that there should be an empty string between input and
basically I'm trying to figure out I wanted to distinguish between the last shuffle and then we start accepting input for the next.
Well, actually I think the easiest way to read this input is just by ignoring all blank lines and by trying to read one integer after another. Because, like, when you try to read an integer, here we have, like, a first integer, then a blank line, and then a string of integers. And after you read this integer, like, if you try to read a next integer, it will automatically reach the line, and it will return a big integer, no matter, like, how much space is between these two things. So you should ignore every blank lines and try to read, like, scan. You should repeat this, calling this function as many times as you need.
Okay. That's not the problem. Is after you input the shuffles,
okay,
you then input an integer showing which shuffle you observe. Yeah. Then there's a blank line, and then you basically start from the beginning over there. What's killing me is after you read each subsequent shuffle, as opposed to be you have to test for a blank line so you know when to read the next set of inputs. And that's why I keep.
Oh, I see. No, but you have the number of test cases here. You know the number of test cases, right?
But you don't know the number of shuffles that were observed.
Oh, I see.
That's what's killing me.
I see. I see. Yeah, okay, so in this case, just trying to compare a blank line, we're using str, cmp, command string, and this will work.
Okay.
So far, I'm sorry. Did anybody if you try to solve the last problem? 208. I think this is the most interesting of them. Do you know when you get the service? Page 52.
I don't think you find that one for us.
Okay, but this means that you should consult for your homework, or?
Each chapter has about 8 questions, but usually the ones that he assigns which ones we have to attempt to try.
Okay.
So, I guess we could do that for, like, you know, extra credit or anything, but he's not going to grade it, basically.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, you could go over it.
Yeah, I think, it's interesting because, like, the only reasonable way to solve it is to try all, like, possible combinations of assigning the combination of dices to what you serve. So, okay, if you didn't try to solve it yourself, I would encourage you to try, but, you know, after that, it would be really interesting to talk about that. Because it seems to me that it could be solved more efficiently than just trying all possible ways, but, you know, I'm not 100% sure about it. So try to solve it yourself. And so if you don't have any more questions about homework problems, we'll proceed to today's material. So today we are going to start stream problems. And first, I'm going to tell you, like, a little bit of theory. And then we'll go on to the problems. So, as all of you probably know, all characters have a certain code. And usually, each character is represented by 1 bytecode. This was older, but nowadays, there's a human code that has, like, more than 1 byte, usually 2 or even more bytes per character. But we'll assume that each character is represented by only 1 byte. And here's the usual representation of characters. What's really nice about it is that, like, numbers starting from 0 to 9, they are represented by consecutive codes. 0 is 48 and 9 is 57. It's really nice because it allows you to convert a digit to an integer very easily. So suppose you have 9. Suppose your character contains 9. And you want to convert it to integer. The easiest way to do this is to write something like that. So basically, to subtract minus 0. To subtract the code of 0 from this character to get the integer value. Okay? This works because all these numbers are consecutive integers. And this is also true for letters starting from A and going down to Z. And also, this is also helpful if you want to convert, like, an uppercase letter to down to lowercase letter. Because you can just subtract the difference between say uppercase A and lowercase A, and this distance, like, is the same between any pair of upper and lowercase letters. Okay, it's clear? Okay. Yeah, this is basically what I just said. So, next slide. Yeah, there are basically 2 ways of representing end of line. End of line can be represented by a pair of characters, like character 10, which is new line, and character 15. Or it can be represented by only 1 character, usually 15. So there are, like, 2 differences. And the 2 basic ways of representing new line character, and, you know, this complicates things because you cannot, like, expect any, like, certain, it depends on the system. If you run a program on Unix, you have, like, 2 characters. If you run on Windows, you have, like, 1 or vice versa. But you see, there is a standard way for new line, a standard, like, character to represent this new line combination. You'll probably know this, you know, but slash n.
And usually the compiler, like ultimate journalist, receives in its line of code. For each target platform, the compiler program is supposed to use this symbol with the correct combination of 10 or 15 or 1.
Okay. Any questions about that? There are a number of ways of representing strings. In C, they are usually represented as non-terminate arrays. That is, you have a continuous array of bytes and the last byte zero. Okay, this is not character zero, because this character has code 48. It's not a zero. This is like character that has code zero. It's a difference. Another way of representing strings is by an array in which you specify the length of the string, so you can store it like as the first element of the array or somewhere else. I think in Pascal it was implemented that way. So I think they both type string, and the string was basically an array of bytes, and the first element of that array contained the length of the string, and the rest started from 1, and so like this part contained the actual string, and it was kind of like all arrays were addressed started from 1. So if you address to 0, you got the length of the array. But there was actually a special function called length. That returns basically the integer value from the first element of the array. Okay, it's clear? Okay. Well, the third way is to represent strings as linked list of characters. Then you create a structure containing a character and link to the next character and possibly to the previous character. And the end of the string is such character that like the points to mount at the next element. Okay. So which one of them is better? Well, this is a different question. Basically they're all the same, but probably the most difficult thing with string in C was that strings like C were represented as arrays. And since arrays in C were just pointers, like that. Then it didn't make any sense to add strings. So if you try to write something like, suppose we have two strings, S1, S2, and let's make a third string, S3. If you get something in S1 and S2, and you want to sum them, like to concatenate, and you write something like S3 equals S1 plus S2, well, this is a big error, because S1 and S2 are actually pointers. The point to the memory locations of the start of strings S1 and S2. So basically what you do here, you add up pointers. You don't add up like contents of those strings, and this would result in a runtime error or something bad. So this construction that looks like very initially actually it just work. Well, it's worth this compounds, but this is a big error. Okay. But this is not in Java, in C++, if you use cross-string, but in C it will work. Any questions on it? Well, another way, the difficult point about C strings is that you cannot assign one to string in the same way. If you write something like S1 equals string ABC, well, this is a bad way of doing this. Because this is a constant expression. It has like some address, like some memory,
And basically, what you do here, you just assign the assigned to be, you make this pointer point to the memory location which contains this string. So initially, S1 pointed to its own memory location, and now you make it point to something else, and this memory is closed. So basically, this memory. Yes? Yes, you can, but if you decide it's a pointer, then initially it doesn't point to any memory location, so you first have to allocate the memory. Yes. So you just write mail. But if you write this just as an array, the results are basically the same. But the only difference is that you specify this number like a constant. And here you can write, if you call mallet, you can specify any size, so you can limit the name for changing. Okay? Yes, you got the cast here. Because I think by default now returns void star. Well, maybe it's not so. I think it returns void star. So maybe if you don't do that, you'll get a warning probably. So it's not a matter, but it's a very good idea to get rid of all possible warnings because like each warning is a potential error. Yeah, thank you. Actually, yeah. You should multiply and solve the element. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. After you use that, at the end of the program, you call free. So as you see, like working with streams in C is not really easy. So first you have to care about allocating the required amount of memory, then you have to read at the end. And you should be very careful when you do any copying and assignments. Those things are, you know, possible. Be aware of that. There is all the memory leaks in random errors and stuff like that. And okay, we'll talk later about the special functions that this allow you to do. String initialization and copying and stuff like that. And one more thing, suppose you want to store like, three characters in a string, like A, B, and C. How many memory do you have to allocate? What do you think? 3 bytes? 4? Anything else? Okay, what do you think of 3?
Well, I think that's one, but it's each letter.
Yeah, okay. So actually, yeah, the answer is 4. Because it's always remember about the null character. It's stored at the end of the string. Okay? Okay. And these are the functions that we use to manipulate the string. This function str10 is concatenated one string to another. So suppose you want to initialize your string with like ABC. What if you write instead of just assigning ABC to the span, you should call it should be actually S1 ABC. So what it does, it copies all characters from that string into memory location that is pointed by that variable. Because like all strings in C, they are just just pointers. We point to some memory locations, so there's actually no strings in C, like, they're all pointers. And what else? strlen returns the length of the string. Well, how it works is just scans the whole string until it reaches the null character. And if it doesn't reach it, it will work forever. So it might result like in a second call or whatever. So you should be very careful. You should make sure that you have this null character at the end of the string and that you have enough room to store this null character. What else? Well, there are a number of functions that test the string, like if it's an alphabetical string, if it's in lowercase, you know, it's an uppercase, so we don't do that. And there are a number of functions to convert one character to uppercase and to lowercase. Yes, and all these functions, most of them are containing string.h, some of them are in c'.h. There is one very useful function called strcmp. What it does basically compares two strings based on alphabetical order. And it returns 0 if they are equal and something else if they are not. I don't remember actually. Maybe it returns positive integer if the first is bigger than the second. Maybe negative. I don't remember the details. Okay. Yes, and there is actually a very nice function which is not here. It's called strdouble. For this thing, so it points to nowhere. So before using it, you have to allocate some memory, right? But there is a special function that does that, and it's called strdouble. So what it does, it first allocates the amount of memory that is required to store that string into this string. So basically, it calls malloc the number of bytes equal to the length of the string plus its null character. And then it copies this string into that string. And you know, now we have a string that contains that string. The difference from str cpy or str cat is that it allocates the memory. So actually, it's much more useful. But nowadays, things are actually better because we have classes. Well, when you have classes, it's really easy to work with things because you can initialize them really easily like that. Like just calling a constructor with the screen. And you can even add them. Assign them, and so on. So nowadays it's much easier because of classes. And you can access and even individual elements. Yes? Since you only have to create a memory if you explicitly allocate it. Like by calling you or malloc or whatever. And here you don't explicitly allocate. So as soon as the program leaves this like blocks, all the local variables are created automatically. So as soon as they are out of code, the memory is deallocated. You don't have to worry about that. So you have to free explicitly only if you allocate the code. Okay, so what can we do with things
Now, the most interesting problem is possibly searching one string in another string. Suppose you have these strings S1 and S2. Or, no, let's go back S and P together. And you want to know if this string inside is contained in that string. Can you propose an algorithm for searching a pattern in the string?
Okay, so can you explain in more detail?
Oh, just go look at the first letter and then it matches the pattern. And if it matches the first letter of the pattern,
okay,
you check the second one and the third one, and if it doesn't, then you go to the second letter and check the first letter of the pattern.
Okay.
And keep going.
Okay, yeah.
Can you estimate the running time? Suppose the length of both strings is like n. Yes, the answer is n squared. Because you try pattern at each position of the source string, and this is also n squared. But as it turns out, there are more efficient algorithm that runs in linear time. But it's a little complicated. So we're going to explain right here, but you know, it exists and it may seem like work much faster because suppose you get two strings of that 1,000 characters. These are actually not very long strings because in some applications, like computational biology, have very long strings representing DNA or genomes. They are like billions of characters long. And you know, the difference between n squared and n is really, really big. So, supporting the theory for example, actually, the top theory is worse in practice, it's worse really fast as well. And it allows you to solve like a lot of problems much easier in less time. For example, this is the following problem. Suppose you have one string, I'll just throw it in the box, and you cut it somewhere in the middle. And let's call this part S1 and this part S2. And then you transform this string into another. You just swap this part. Now it's like S2 and S1. So basically what you do like add rotation. You just take it and being rotated. Okay? And this part goes here and this part goes to the end. This looks like rotation string. So it's circle rotation. And now suppose that we have two strings. Let's say S and P of the same length S. And we want to find out if the first string is a circle rotation of the second. So for example, if you have S is A, B, A, and B is B, A. It's obvious that this string is circle rotation of this string, right? You just have to move two characters left, right? So, can anyone propose an algorithm that checks if one string is circle rotation of another? Yeah?
Well, I mean, basically, you just use the algorithm that you mentioned that they're switching the two halves. Do a for loop over the length of that string and switch the first character with the rest of the string, which provides the one character rotation.
Yes.
And then you just straight compare it every time.
So you propose that we try all possible like rotations in which we just cut, right?
Because all possible rotations, yeah.
So first we assume that we just cut like here.
Yeah, every time you're cutting it on the first one, if you're replacing it, I was thinking of replacing the string,
okay.
or if you're copying the string, then you just change where the string
is. Okay. Can you estimate the amount of time?
Shouldn't be that. I mean, switching it is it's just creating new strings, so that should be the amount of time.
Okay.
And then you have to do it n times, so that should be n. You have to do a string compare. I don't know how the string compare works.
Well, so
my guess is it'd be whatever string compare, which I guess is probably n.
Yes, so n times the
time required to compare the strings, right?
Right.
So yes, it's n, because you have to compare them like character by character. If you see that there's a mismatch at least one character, then we know that, you know, then it's not a super mismatch. So yeah, the time to compare strings is n. And we have like n possible ways of cutting. Therefore, the total time is something like order of n squared. But can we do this in linear time? And actually, remember, we have an algorithm that finds the appearance of a pattern in a string in linear time. So can we use this algorithm to simplify that problem? So what we should try to do is to reduce this problem to the problem of finding a pattern in the string. This string, and if it is, then the first thing is circle rotation of the second one. Okay, very good.
But how is searching through that going to be linear time?
Well, it depends.
Because don't you have to search? I mean, don't you have to basically do the same thing? I mean, you have to search the first position to see whether it matches up, search the second position to see whether it matches up.
No, but actually, there is a linear time search algorithm. Given two strings of length m and n, you can determine if the first string is contained in the second in linear time, in time m plus n.
Yeah. Okay. So,
yeah, there is a linear time algorithm.
Oh, okay, I've seen that. I'm saying, I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, well, it's not very difficult. Okay. Let's now talk about the problems that we have. So the first problem is number 110302, and the page number is 66. Have you guys seen this problem before? Okay, so I'll just give you some time to read, and then we will discuss it. Okay, so just read. Okay, so what we have here, we are given a grid of characters and a list of words. And we want to determine if those words are contained in that grid. So they can start at any position and they can go like the horizontal line, or vertical or diagonally. Yeah. any ideas on the solid?
Yes?
But the only thing that we care about is like boundaries of this grid, because if you start looking for like a Fourier convert, start in that position, you run out of memory. But actually, you won't run out of memory, because like this grid is stored sequentially, like row per row. So in the memory, it's represented as one big string like that. A, B, C, B, A, C, and D, B, A. So if you try to look for a three-letter word starting at that position, do you actually look for that substring? And if this word that you're looking for is B, C, D, then you report that this word is found at that position. Now, this is the wrong answer. There is no fairness here, so you should be careful about that. Well, let's first of all, I think there's a mini problem. Now, let's look at the next one. Number 304. Okay, I'll give some time to read. Do you hear me? So here you're given a text that is decrypted by a substitution cipher. So which is when you substitute one character by another. Like basically you take a permutation of characters and you substitute according to that permutation. So you have like one hint, you know that one of those sentences is the quick round function jumps over the lazy dog. But you don't know which one of them is that. So, how do you solve it? Yes?
Well, you can. First thing I do is just read all of the encrypted sentences into an array.
Okay.
look for one that has words, word lengths match up with the word lengths for the third product box in terms of the ways to go.
Okay.
So as you've done all those, you can do your substitutions and
okay, but what if there are two such sentences?
It doesn't matter. It says if there's more than one possible description, then one will do.
No, I mean, that suppose that you have like two sentences. Each of them has that number of words, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, each one has 9 words, right? And all of words are like of the same length. And in this case, you will have to choose one of them.
Let's choose the first one.
Why? Oh, okay. Suppose you have A, and so on. So, 9 words.
Oh, well, right. You have to make sure that the duplicate letters in this sentence, of which I think there are like 5 or something like that, match up. That's true.
Okay, but still suppose the two sentences, like the loop, like the that sentence that we're looking for, it's still possible. I think so. I mean, could you explain in more detail how you choose these sentences? Maybe I just...
Well, I mean, okay, the important things are is that you first get to check that you have the right number of words.
Okay.
Then you check that each word is the right number of characters. And then you have to make sure that, you have you have the twice.
Okay.
So you have to make sure that in your encoding, that you're basically not coming up with a contradiction when you do your encoding.
But how do you do that? Actually, this is probably the most difficult part to do. How do you make sure that...
As you go through the array, you say, in this one you have X and T.
Okay.
So you basically have an array that goes from 0 to 25 or 1 to 26 or whatever.
Okay.
With each one representing a letter. Then you throw the T in there. Oh, the T goes into position X, and I'm going to put H in position N.
Okay.
And I'm going to put E in position M. And as soon as I reach a character like, if I try to put T into a position and I get a contradiction, basically that T has already been somewhere else, or there's another character
on the spot. Could you write the program in the blackboard?
I see.
Well, in any language, maybe in pseudo language, like whatever. Well, just like to make the program as you would call it, because it's easier to say this in words, but it can be more difficult to express this as a program. So can you just write, or does anybody want to write? Because it's still unclear to me how can you do that. Do you want to write it in the main word?
It's just basically that you just go make a
plan. So yeah.
That I translate the letters into the appropriate array slots. Just getting right is always really confusing for me, because I have to, I do like A minus A or something like that. The character minus A to get the appropriate slot in the array.
But what you're saying is basically right. That's, the implementation is usually more difficult than the same idea. So, does anybody want to try to do that? Why not?
I feel like I need to set up for a spike.
It's okay. Okay, well, I get it.
Yes, so... Once you found two sentences, when once upon a sentence with the required number of words and the required number of characters in each word, you have to check if it's possible to establish a mapping between the characters of that sentence and the characters of the sentence that we know. And actually, I think this is the most interesting part of this problem. So.
One way that you might do it is, instead of setting up an array, which you have to make sure that you don't get a contradiction either way in your mapping.
Yes.
it might be easier to just set up two hash tables that one of them maps, and then each time you do a mapping, you just map it in both hash tables, one of which is the forward mapping, the encryption mapping, and one is the decryption mapping. And then you can check for a contradiction on either side by checking the two hash tables.
But why do you need two hash tables?
One for the decryption and one for the encryption.
But the second one will be the inverse of the first one.
Right, but you not can't necessarily find, it's very difficult to look into a hash table result and say, oh, what's the key to that?
Well, I don't know, but I think the way we're using just an array is like an easier one, so, okay, let's try to do that.
Okay, suppose we have an array, of 26 letters that will be our method. Let's choose a shorter thing, M. And let's store that stream, let's go between brown holes. Now let's store it in itself. So stream like that. By zeros, and zero indicate that there is no method for that character. So for all from all places of this array, let's put zero characters. And now let's just walk through all characters of that sentence. Try to establish the method. So, first of all, if the next character is a space, you just skip it. Well, I'm trying to address the array that contains mapping by using character. By using the character code of this symbol. But I know that the array starts, the first index is actually 0 and the last is 25. So how can I convert this range careful cruelty to the range of
minus lowercase or a
bed. That's a.
Yeah, all letters are lowercase. Okay.
So we have established this method, and we'll be able to use it like further. Suppose that this method is not zero, so it was already like fine. Then we should check. So what should we check? We should check that. The letter defined by this method should be the same as the letter at this template, right? And it's not the same that means that this method is wrong. So if it's not the same as the letter of the display, then we say that this method is wrong. So what we do is say, well, if we can have a flag,
but wait, does this sentence contain all possible characters, all 26 characters, or not really?
With the brown box.
Yeah. So I think it should work. Because if there's a method that maps each character of that string into each character of that string, this means we map all 26 characters, and so, after this loop, we have to check the flag, and if this flag is false, this means that the method was established earlier. I think so. Okay. So you have to check if this flag is false, then and now you can decode text. And you don't have it to repeat until you find a screen such that the mapping can be satisfied. So does anybody have any questions about that one? Does it seem to be clear? So, no questions? Okay, let's go to the next problem, which is number 306, file fragmentation. Page 72.
Okay, so basically this problem, you initially had, I think, a given number of like copies of the same string. Oh, yeah, let's say you have three copies of the same string, and you divide it in an arbitrary position, like this string, like the second position, this, the fourth, and so on. And what's given to you as an input are those parts, like in arbitrary order. So you have like, two parts of each string in a random order, in unknown order. And what you have to do is to reconstruct the original string based on these parts. Yes, and this string is a binary string, so it contains only zeros and ones. So for example, let's look at this example. You have 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1,
Yeah, this pitching is important to you at 6 planets. But so any of these how to solve?
This seems like one of the first things you want to do is figure out how long the strings are.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
You can do by taking the longest fragment and the shortest fragment and adding those together.
Yes, but it's really different than the length of string.
I think so, because you know that the longest fragment has to be connected to the shortest fragment. I mean, you won't necessarily know if there's two that are of the same length that are the longest. If you have two of the same length that are the shortest, you won't know which one connects with which initially, but you'll know what length they have.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's true. Okay, actually, I was thinking about another way of doing that. You can just sum up all the lengths and then divide by the number of lengths. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
Okay, so once you know the length of the original string, what do you do?
Of the file again? You added all the lengths of the fragments and did what for it?
Once you sum them up, you can invent the total length of all strings, so you just divide it by the number of fragments, by the number of strings. And the number of strings is the number of fragments over 2. So to find the length, L sum of L I and divide by there any number of things. Okay, so if you take this longer string and you merge it with this one, you get a little one. First of all, there are two ways to merge them. You put this at the beginning and this at the end, or this at the beginning and this at the end. You can merge two frames in two ways. So suppose you put firm and this firm, and we get something different.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Can you like formalize it in more detail, like the program? Okay, so yeah, I think backtracking would be the right idea too, because it seems that there is no other way to determine. Yes. How did you do? Sorry, which combination?
It's basically a Taiwan combination.
Of what?
Of
all strings?
Basically, except for the ones that doesn't have
the right thing. So, but can you like explain it more detail? What do you mean by finding all combinations? Like, first you start from the first string and you try to find a match for the first string?
Basically, you
know,
first spell the first string and the second
string, and you look at
that's
the right thing because
that's
settled.
Okay. And you go on, like, basically, like a nested
order of I and J. Okay. I go to the first string.
So J.
Can you just write it? Because, basically, first I test D, so. So you take the first and the second.
And you look at the other. And obviously, the next is that right, so you go on to this one and this one.
Okay.
And if it's right, then you put this in front of this.
Okay.
And then you get one more.
Okay.
And then when we test the string, in order for this, we need either to find a. Find.
A prefix for it.
Yeah, like a prefix or suffix for it.
Okay.
Which in this case, that takes a die away, then you can break out of it. This one and this one and this one.
Yeah, but you just put this one first and this one at the end.
Oh, yeah, well.
So there are two things. There are two ways of merging this pair of things. So, is this still recursion or not?
This thing is just a loop through the thing.
A loop through what?
Like if you sort it first, you could do a binary search or something like that. Is that?
Okay, suppose you fill the first pair, then tell what's the next. Do you have an
output? Well, I don't remember the. I wrote a function actually to check everything else.
Okay.
Like checking to see if the prefix exists in the dictionary as well, or if not in the suffix. Because both is intended for the query.
Actually, at no point I'm saying how do you do with the query. Because how do you store the pairs? I mean, it's supposed to choose like to merge the first and the third, and then you go through them again. Yeah. So then you pick up the second pair. You store those pairs in some array.
That's good.
Well, I think it might be easier to do it by recursion, just, you start with the recursion function, you pick up a new pair among, I mean, from the array of available strings, and you try to merge it in such a way that it assigns the string, the old string that you assembled earlier. And if you find this pair, you proceed, you call this recursion function again, tries to find another pair, and so on until all the strings are exhausted. Or if, like, it's impossible to merge it in such a way that if it signs with the feather, then you roll back and try.
So, yes, basically, it's backtracking, and I think that this problem doesn't have to do much with strings. Actually, this looks like a standard backtracking problem. So, does anybody have any questions? Okay. Well, but this idea is that you try every possible combination, and if you think that this looks good, like at that step, you make another step. Yeah. Well, I think it's very easy to illustrate with backtracking on the problem of N-queens. Put N queens on the board. So we have an 8 by 8 board. And you want to put N queens. So first of all, you know that you cannot put 2 queens in one row for a mark column because almost. So you try to put a queen in each of those rows. And you scan all possible positions in a certain column. And you can see that this position is good, really just put it. Good means that, some written by like all previous queens and all previous columns. So, but, you know, there is still no guarantee that if you put that queen in that position, then it will be possible to put all of these. So, you know, so it might happen that you have to backtrack and to try to place it to the other position. So, this is basically how backtracking works. So, try like placing things in all like possible positions. And basically, it's looking good here. So, you try to merge all possible pairs and you do this follow down merge. So, basically, I'm saying that this is a backtracking problem. So any more questions about this problem? Okay, let's look at the last problem. I think this is the most interesting one. It's number 307. Okay, so here we have a dictionary of words, and we have a pair of words, and then we want to transform the first word into the second one by doing like substitution, one substitution like per move. So, for example, if you take as the first word, and you can change only one character in it. Yes, here's an example. So you take booster, and first you change E to R, then you change O to A, and then you change R to D. And we want to do this in a minimum number of changes. So we want to find under the path that contains the least possible number of changes. And all the infinite words, they should be in the dictionary. So, any ideas? Yes? So you want to organize the dictionary for that tree, or?
Yeah, if you build a tree and have it, you build that what you show is that.
So you take all the input words from the dictionary and you build the tree? Or?
No, you build a tree for the one with the
original. Oh, for the original?
Yeah.
I see. Also. So, this might not be a good idea. So we start, let's take this word. So we start with booster as the root of the tree, and then you have like another branch that corresponds to substitution. Okay. But how do you can represent the tree and how do you traverse
it?
Okay. And remember that we have to find this first step.
Yes?
I don't think so.
Might be able to, create a graph of the dictionary with each link representing a one character difference.
Okay.
And then just do like a shortest path or something like that. I don't know how easy that would be to generate.
Yeah, that's actually a good idea. So the problem is that you have like 25,000 words here. And you have to represent this graph really efficiently, because if you try to do it like the adjacent semantics, it won't work because.
Right.
Yes? Excuse me? Okay, what do you mean by wouldn't necessarily give you the shortest. If you try like substituting one character, then I'm not sure that you'll end up with the shorter path.
Yes.
Oh, breath first? Oh, okay. Yes, basically this is a graph problem when we have like a starter verb represented by the initial word, and you have like all these words in the dictionary with that verb in the graph, and you connect two words if they differ only in one character, and you want to find the second word, right, and you want to find the shortest path between them. So basically I think there are a couple of problems. The first is how you represent this graph, because it could contain a very large number of vertices, and you won't be able to represent it as a basis matrix. So first of all, do you really need to store the whole graph? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, So you should just store in the linked list of edges, And another problem is, how would you address this dictionary? How would you store this list of words? As a what? Linked list? How would you search the linked list? So basically what you have to do here, you have this list of words and you should build a data structure that would allow you to search them really fast. So you don't care about insertions and deletions because you have a static list of words. And the only thing that you care about is searching efficiently. So fortunately you have such classes as hash table, something like that, SAS or MAX in STL or in Java. But in other days, you didn't have that. So you had to implement it for yourself. So how would you do that if you didn't have those classes like that? What is the easiest way to organize at least it converts into like an efficient data structure. Which tree? Well, binary tree, it could be like, I think it should be like a balanced tree, because if it's just a binary tree, it could be almost linear, and it would take a linear time to search. So it should be something like red black tree or like AML tree or whatever. But can anybody of you implement AML tree just from scratch without using any books? I cannot, because it's complicated. And rotation, stuff like that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, basically, this is the easiest way of doing that. Because this relation is static, this would suffice, but suppose that it was like dynamic. What would you do? Suppose that you had to add more words or something like that. Well, I think the easiest way of organizing like a big collection of words into an efficient data structure is hashing them. It should be like the most easy thing to implement. Because what we have to do is just like, does anybody of you know what is hashing? Raise your hand if you know what is hashing. Oh, okay, awesome.
The hashing is just mapping from like a large set to a smaller set. So the idea is to calculate a function over the stream to get a number between the slot of the like of the small array. Like here we have this array of leaves, and you calculate function of each stream that points you to a certain button. And here is stored like with the list of words that meant like good money. And like in the other work, all these words will be like distributed uniformly about good money. So it's a very desirable property. So
but in this case I think the sorting will be fine. Okay, so basically what you have to do is just do a graph search. And so I would say this is a graph problem, this is not a string problem. Okay, does anybody have any questions about this problem? Well, I think they shouldn't be very difficult to implement. Okay, so thank you very much for your attention.